Hello and welcome to the HBO Boys podcast. Today we're here to talk about One Battle After Another, the new Paul Thomas Anderson movie that is hitting the town at full speed. $22 million in its opening week, far surpassing PTA's biggest week of all time, which was There Will Be Blood's fifth week of $4.9 million, which is an insane sentence.
Yeah, right. And that was back in what, 2007?
Yeah, right. When the dark times, when the internet barely existed,
and
we learned what oil was from that movie.
I can't believe that was 2007.
Doesn't that make you feel bad?
Ryan, old.
In your bones, it makes you feel bad. Okay. One by Avernor. Paul Thomas Anderson, married to Maya Rudolph from the SNLs, the power couple.
Oh, really?
Of the,
I didn't know that.
Isn't that a little fun fact? Power couple of the freaking century. So,
yeah.
PTA comes back, and they've been doing a decent job of marketing this movie. So much so that you and I saw it within the first 3 days it was out. And that, like, going to the theaters isn't obviously a thing we're all doing less, I would assume, post-COVID. It just... because everything is on the screen in your house, so why would you leave a lot of the time? But
right. We
decided to get out there for this one. What was it for you that got you out for Once a Battle of Time in Hollywood Another?
Once a fun of time in Hollywood after another. So, quite frankly, it was the buzz around it. Like, you know, I'm a fan of Leo. The cast looked stacked. And when I found out it was the guy who did Once Upon a Time, yeah, sure. Now look what you did.
I got you, dude.
Found out that it was the guy who did There Will Be Blood. I was very interested, and then I started seeing the early reviews. And you know, I don't put a lot of weight in reviews because, like, sites like Rotten Tomatoes are kind of bullshit, right?
So, takes.
I mean, is it though?
No.
I saw early reviews, but I kept seeing great reviews for it, and people were, you know, praising it for its content, for its acting, for its slight humor. And I'll be honest, the first quarter of that movie, I was like, where's this humor?
Wasn't very funny for the first quarter.
Wasn't funny.
Well, they were doing a revolution, Adam.
Of course.
They were a little busy for jokes. They were revolutionizing. So
They were. They were in their infancy. Leo hadn't become a stoner yet. And spoiler alert.
Yeah. Rocket Man, his code name, hadn't become that and fallen into... the dark times. But this movie is made by Paul Thomas Anderson, a man that Quentin Tarantino calls his friend and friendly rival and contemporary, Quentin Tarantino called him.
But yeah, no. Interesting.
This dude has made a lot of amazing movies. Ultimately, what he's made is There Will Be Blood, though. Like, of course. Although Tarantino then also says in that same interview that he likes Boogie Nights more than There Will Be Blood. I think that's just to be like too cool for school a little bit, but that's fine.
I mean, Boogie Nights, great movie, you know,
Mark Wahlberg,
you know, kind of like put him in the forefront of Hollywood. I mean, he was obviously part of the Funky Bunch, but
was his first outing
was Boogie Nights.
Yeah, or after Funky Bunch. He left the bunch and went into the Boogie.
Yeah. Great. Yeah. So, and that movie was just like fun and ridiculous. And I like the style of storytelling that he does. So, very excited to see that one. That was the big reason why I wanted to go.
While watching One Battle After Another, I kept having this like really pervasive thought, which is Paul Thomas Anderson is a man who is almost 20 years out from his magnum opus. Mm. He made There Will Be Blood in 2007. And he's just still out there and making stuff. I didn't see Licorice Pizza because the vibes were off for me a little bit. Side note, it was funny to watch a member of Haim, you know, the lady who also starred in Licorice Pizza, get blasted in the freaking dome during this movie. Just one of the only people shot in the head. It was like,
There was quite a few, I mean, not for me, but definitely for you. There was quite a few jump scares with gunshots, I've noticed.
I'm a jump scare guy. I jumped.
Your whole body twitched.
Oh, yeah. You were next to me, so you knew. But yeah, no, if something moves slightly on screen, my body's like, what is, come on, get out of there.
I'll never forget when we went and saw Dunkirk in 70 millimeter.
Dude,
you were like,
I jumped on the ceiling, dude.
Yeah, man. It was wild.
Like, whoa, that was scary, huh? And no one else jumped. Oh, okay. Yeah, I thought it was scary. But yeah, picture that Paul Thomas Anderson is in this weird place that I don't think he has many people he can talk to about this. Like, he's already made the best thing he's ever gonna make. And he knows it. But also, weirdly, everyone knows it. Like, Phantom Thread, I don't know if you saw that. No. Another Daniel Day-Lewis joint.
I did not.
It was good. Great, even. But to me, it felt like weird and desperate the whole time. It felt like a guy who was really wanting to prove to the world that he can keep getting better, that There Will Be Blood isn't his magnum opus, that in fact, it's only a stepping stone while the rest of the world had already anointed him. So like, it's just weird because it's like Phantom Thread, a great movie, but failing publicly to not reach There Will Be Blood levels. And it only failed publicly, I think, in that way, because the vibe was he was trying to do that. I don't know. It just felt like he had his claws in,
so
desperately
meta,
climbing the mountain. It is. But this movie didn't feel that way. Like, this movie doesn't feel like he's aiming to make his best movie ever. Like, he's trying to surpass There Will Be Blood. It felt like a more of its time, like the time, you know, today, right now. It felt more like he was riding a wave than trying to conduct the ocean. You know what I mean? Like,
wow.
He was just, this one is just straight fucking vibes.
Yeah, it really is. And no, it felt very intentional. You know, it was a just great storytelling, great character development, character action, set pieces, everything. But you're right. It didn't feel like he was going for an Academy Award for Best Picture. You know, that I don't, although
I
think he's
going
to
get
nominated.
Yeah,
I think he's going to get nominated for sure. But I don't think that was the intention. I think you're right there.
And by the way, speaking of nominations, Sean Penn, he's going to get nominated for Best Supporting Actor, and he should win it.
He's so great.
Incredible dude in this movie.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. I have never hated a character more in my life.
His physical mannerisms were so specific, too.
It really was. Oh, he's incredible. Just really, really showing us why he is one of the GOATs.
And by the way, like, we've only watched this movie once. I desperately want to watch it again, specifically for his performance
and
for Benicio Del Toro's performance.
Sensei.
Who, by the way...
Sensei, I need help!
Sensei! Oh, my God.
He's so good.
The thing is, he's going to get nominated for Best Supporting Actor, too, and he's going to lose to Sean Penn, and that's fine.
And
but
that's fine,
both
yeah.
of them. All the sensei stuff. Like you just said, so first quarter of this movie, not very funny, but like every moment Benicio Del Toro is on screen, he is just fucking taking care of business and being hilarious.
Oh my God, yeah. And you can tell, like, this character's been around the block. Like, he's a humble karate school teacher, but there's more.
He also
that
runs
man.
Shit.
Yeah, he runs like an underground railroad, essentially.
I'm going to say that the Sean Penn performance in One Battle After Another is the second best PTA-based performance ever, right behind Daniel Day-Lewis and There Will Be Blood. That's just facts. I'll put Philip Seymour Hoffman in Boogie Nights right behind that, although John C. Reilly in Boogie Nights, too, I really, really love. So, I don't know. It's up there. Anyway, this movie's going to get nominated for a bunch of stuff, including, by the way, for its score, which was incredible as well.
It was really, really... you know, when I was watching it, I almost like leaned over to you and said, dude, this music though, right? Because every single choice was so well placed. Like it didn't feel like it was cluttering the audio.
No, it was almost like minimalism.
It was so good.
Like personified, I don't know, in a fucking score. It was so good. By the way, written by Johnny Greenwood, who this is his sixth film he's done with PTA. He also did The Master and There Will Be Blood and Phantom Thread, to name, you know, three out of those six. So this dude's prolific, and this score, probably his second best score in a PTA movie behind, sadly, There Will Be Blood. If I was Paul Thomas Anderson listening to us right now, which, by the way, he's not, but if he was, I would, I was him, I'd be like, fucking, oh yeah? How does everything compare? Yeah, how does everything compare?
Tell me why I should keep doing my job.
On top of that, other amazing performances. I mean, Tiana Taylor is Perfidia.
Yeah.
Was great. She'll probably get nominated for Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
Chase Infinity, which is a real name of a person.
Oh.
Is the girl who played Willa. She was great too.
She was wonderful, especially towards the end where she's like really leaning into the revolution stuff at the nunnery. But dude, like, pretty intense. She's very, at first she was like very sweet, like young girl learning karate, but then, yeah, man, just letting it rip.
And especially after she found out that her mother was not dead, but a rat, like having to reconcile with that in real time, because we're following her basically in real time for the last third of the movie. She becomes the main character, and we follow her all the way to the end. And as you said earlier as well, the second and third part of this movie, really, really funny. Like Leo forgetting the passwords the entire time was really good. Again, that's accentuated by Benicio del Toro, who's incredible and really funny every moment he's on screen. Every Christmas Adventurers Club scene, dude, amazing. Funny.
It is amazing, but holy shit.
Holy shit, though, right?
You know, that this is something that I told Hannah on the way home. Like, this movie hit on themes that were like,
oh boy,
wow. But it did it in a way that didn't feel egregious.
No, but it did feel like a slightly 1% off reality we were living in.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
Maybe not, though. You know, it felt it felt so close to reality. In fact, just perhaps only reality, to the point where it made me feel really uncomfortable.
Yeah,
but those scenes were incredible, and every one of them were funny.
Oh yeah, when they were in the underground lair of the Christmas Club. And they're like explaining what they need to do. Dude, so good.
And then on that same level, like Leo, every time he said hombre, or after he, every time he was just straight up being a racist.
Yeah.
Like, the first time he called the person a homie, my body literally went like, oh, no.
Yeah, no, it was a little off-putting.
It was. Which, by the way, a lot of the movie was. And it kind of just, I don't know.
It worked, though.
Very at home. Yeah, it felt very at home, just settling into that unsettlingness.
Of course, yeah. And I think, you know, obviously intentional. And yeah, just great, man. And aside from the movie being, you know, well-paced and well-written and the score and everything, like, the way it was filmed was great. A lot of up-close, like, macro shots. Beautiful. They shot it in 70mm. I wish I could have seen this in IMAX. I see pictures of people singing on IMAX and it looks larger than life. And I'm just thrilled that movies are not all CGI like all these comic book movies anymore, and we're actually getting real cinematography in these types of movies. And there was even like this overhead shot where Perfidia is running through and she ran into a car park garage or whatever. And I even leaned over. I was like, this is a good shot. this is a great shot.
He did really good with this. Yeah, I mean, like the entire last sequence with the three cars going up and down the hills looked incredible, man.
So wonderful.
And I think my last point on this movie is basically that I think a lot of people are going to say that this was better than There Will Be Blood to be annoying. I think they're going to be wrong. I think this is like Paul Thomas Anderson saw Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and wanted to make his version, but like not with the same. Just there is like an inherent joy about in and within Once Upon a Time in Hollywood that I think Paul Thomas Anderson wanted to sort of weave into this version of the story, of his version of reality, which is scarier and worse, funnier for all the same reasons. So, but they still will be wrong. I think There Will Be Blood is still better. This movie was like 90% there for me. I wanted to be shown one more scene that made clear that the French 75 were a household name. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, sure. Yeah.
I know we got the wheelchair down the hallway selfie scene where she got caught and they were all the cops were really psyched, obviously, because she killed a security guard. And you know, they're a revolutionary conglomerate. So, like, you know, catching them was, based on that one scene, a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But, like, seemed on the news kind of big deal. It was definitely on the news. But I wanted to know how many days it was on the news.
Oh, like, yeah.
I wanted to know how the world felt just a tiny percentage more, so that it gave, because what I was hoping was that the French 75 was like ubiquitous in this world, that it's something you don't remember learning, but you know it, you know, like one of those things, like,
right.
Yeah, if you live in America, you know the French 75.
I mean, it was at least 17 years that they were active, and all these sanctuary cities were built over this time. They had the code name that they created that, I mean, he's talking to someone on the other line that he's never heard of before. And they, you know, there's just an immense amount of people now. So it's grown. It's like the original, you know, the OG member of the French 75 Revolution Group. Yeah, I think I would have liked to see that too. Like, really what they were doing. Like the activities of them, you know, being revolutionists, I think I would have liked to see. I mean, we got it at the beginning kind of, but I think it would have been nice to see kind of the progression of it. Again, we saw little slices of it, but I think, yeah, it could have done a little bit more.
And I think I'm being picky. Like, they obviously became like folk famous, not infamous,
right.
Which
right.
also allowed PTA to do a thing I would assume he was trying to do, which was make a really grounded movie.
Sure.
In fact, the decision to not do any of the stuff I just said and make it a little subtle, like folk hero-y and less infamy for sure kind of stuff feels like it's specifically aimed at keeping a movie grounded rather than the infamy version of the movie, which perhaps would be like a bit too extravagant and take you out of it. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, I think I maybe know. If they did show more of it, as you're saying that, it almost would be taking more of a stance than it probably wanted to. You know, I think the revolutionary, obviously be on the right side of history kind of thing is a great like baseline. But if you dig too much more into it, it could get even more. I mean, it was pretty political, but like even more political. Yeah. And lose sight of the actual underlying character story, which I loved this character story. I thought it was great. And it was a great story.
And I think it's a great movie and people yeah. should go see it. Like that's the headline here. I was burying the lead the whole time.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for joining us on our really quick dive into One Battle After Another. You can go and listen to our back catalog. We talk a lot about way more movies and television shows in the past, and you can get all of that backlog for free. Well, not exactly free, for more, like it's like a dollar, but there's a lot of it. So Adam, could you tell everyone how to find that, please?
Because yeah, I'll just take over for you.
I was
now
too busy stalling. Yeah, thanks.
Yes, so as Ryan said, please subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/HBOBOIZ. For, like he said, one or more dollars a month, you can get all the stuff early, ad-free, and some Patreon exclusives, which we'll be talking about today. Something new and exciting that I don't know about, so that'll be fun. But we also read your name out at the end of every episode that we post. So we'd like to thank Connor O'Dowd, Jamie Lochner, Jurassic World Afterbirth, Clementine Pennyfeather, Best Name, Brent Ginn, Craig, John Jewers, Major Woody, Butter Nichols, Susan, Buffalo Pizzle, C. Fritz, and Pumpkin Season 4. And thank you, Brent Ginn and Butter Nichols, for being our $5 a month tier patron. We appreciate all of you, and you too as well, for that little extra. Also, follow us on our socials at the HBO Boys Pod or the HBO Boys Podcast on Threads, Instagram, and TikTok. Like, comment, subscribe. I post polls, interact with me. It's a pretty fun little place to talk about movies, TVs, and other things. Any last words of advice for our moviegoers here, Ryan?
Yes, when you're watching One Battle After Another, focus on all of the driver's side car doors and them not closing the entire time except for at the end, because I think it's a metaphor or I'm overreading into it.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.